This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Guy Donaldson,
Alison Molden,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, Guy, now you were at the College of Education, which then became part of Massey University.
Yes, it did. Yes, and so that was part of political changes, political pressures there, and where the standalone College of Education. Which did have some connections with Massey, because the students who were doing their three-year program would sometimes go on to a fourth year to finish up with a Bachelor of Education by doing studies at Massey. But with the pressures at the time associated with Rogernomics, and that the College of Education became part of Massey, and it was described then as a merger between the two institutions. For me, that was it was a disturbing time all the way through the 1990s because of changes in philosophy and education, and the impact on programs. A lovely thing happened for me during the 1990s, however, was that one of the students that I took on was a teacher at Palmerston North Girls High School. Judith was wanting to do her ATCL in piano.
And ATC.
That's the Associate of the Trinity College of London.
Yeah.
And it's a diploma beyond the grades. And so I became her piano teacher. And at the point when she was successful in that, we decided we'd go beyond the professional relationship, and we then decided we, because she, like me, was separated in her, and that became a very fruitful time of getting to know each other, and in so doing, for both of us, it was a therapeutic time, and we were eventually married in 1999, and at the same time, I was able to support her in her music teaching at Palmerston North Girls High School, and she was the head of music department there, and so we had this ability to understand each other personally, but also understand each other professionally. By the beginnings of the next decade, I was getting more and more frustrated with institutional life, and
it had merged into Massey University.
It had merged into Massey University, but things were changing both in terms of educational philosophy, which I wasn't very comfortable with. That was on a national level. Things were changing in the College of Education in terms of the focus on the ability to actually teach the subjects. There was so that the music department itself was starting to contract, starting to disappear, and its ability to teach music programs. And I was aware of my a certain amount of grief at the loss of a culture which I valued.
Yeah. So, and you had to adopt a university-style culture?
Pressures there? At one level, things didn't change to start off with. We just became owned by Massey University, really. But we could actually see that there was a time coming where we would be forced to shift out of our premises down by the lagoon, and go up into smaller housing up on the top of the hill. Everything was going to be changing, and I was just I got into a position where I could also see that the life of a school teacher in the secondary sector was not getting any easier. And I was starting to question myself, why was I helping to train young teachers into a profession that I would never go back into myself, because it was such a it required such a dedication of life to make it work.
Yeah.
In the meantime, my wife was discovering that she was working two jobs in one, because as a music teacher she was not only being a classroom teacher, but she was in charge for the extracurricular music as well, and it was all becoming too much.
And this was a time when the teacher's load in terms of paperwork and so on was increasing.
Oh, absolutely, everything was bursting exponentially, and the satisfactions were getting harder to maintain. And she was directing school productions. I assisted her with a production of the Mikado, and also with another production, The Wizard of Oz, which featured as the main lead, Annalise. Judith had a lot to do with the early stage with the Annalise and her choirs and all the rest of that.
And moved on to be quite successful.
Yes, absolutely. But Judith got to the stage where she couldn't maintain the workload, and she stepped outside to become a private piano and singing teacher. And then I decided that I couldn't abide the institutional life any longer. So I subsequently asked to take leave for a year. So I was told, yes, I could do that, provided I could find a substitute.
Yeah.
So I said I could find a substitute. And so Judith and I swapped jobs.
Now, you mentioned, though, as well, that merging with Massey didn't cause too much of a change in what you were doing overall. Mm-hmm. As a lecturer, was there a redefinition of the role of lecturer?
Yes. Initially it didn't, but increasingly we were expected to be researchers. Mm-hmm. And I negotiated with my head of department. I said, I have this choice to make. Either I do what the university is expecting of me, and I could do research on the 12-tone technique as found in German expressionistic composers and give up my community music. Mm. Or I could sustain my community music and not do research in that way. Mm. Which would you like? And he said, you carry on doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
So there was pressures on the lecturers at that stage to become lecturers, and I even advocated at the time with Massey that the performance role could be seen as an equivalent for research.
Yeah, research outputs through performance.
And all the rest of that. I wasn't successful, I have to say, but that's another story. Yeah. So Judith and I swapped jobs, and she still had a vested interest in carrying on the work that she had felt was unfinished in the secondary area, and she carried on to do a doctorate in the pressures on music teachers in secondary schools, which has been an informative document for subsequent generations. And I was able to help and assist her with perspectives on that. Meantime, while I was taking over her role as a piano and vocal teacher from home, Massey decided to have call people to resign from the role.
Voluntary redundancy.
Voluntary redundancy. My timing was perfect. So I took voluntary redundancy. Judith stayed on. And which was, for both of us, was absolutely the right thing. Judith brought a freshness in her approach to the job, where I was feeling stale. I had enthusiasm for working from home, teaching piano, and my skills were even better suited to the role than Judith's were. And so at that point, then I was able to focus on doing what we were we found is the next step in our career. So from that point, I stepped up my work in the performing area in the community music in Palmerston North. And just looking at my the concerts that I've been engaged with, suddenly in the 2000s, my concert activity was suddenly stepped up because I had the time now to focus on my enthusiasm.
And that's with local choirs and orchestras, or visiting musicians?
Choirs, orchestras, and visiting musicians. You know, I've had the benefit of not only accompanying the likes of Annalise, and done a tour with her on stage, and done a concert recording in Wellington with her. But I've accompanied Dame Malvina Major and you know, other fine musicians which have come to the city.
Yeah. So Palmerston North can attract those, or?
It's not necessarily a matter of attracting. Sometimes these musicians now are welcoming the opportunity to have performance opportunities. In the context of what I've been saying before, the opportunities for concert music making are starting to shrink. Mm. And so a lot of concerts these days now are either, if on the weekends, they are on Saturday and Sunday afternoons rather than evenings. Well, they're still evening concerts because an ageing audience.
Yeah, they don't like being out
there.
Yeah.
Or also, there are house concerts for smaller audiences. And I've run the Globe Sunday Matinee series, which is an afternoon series, which again caters for people who have always enjoyed the concert tradition, and the culture of the concert series is admission by koha, by admission by donation of $5 or more, which reflects the fact that those on fixed incomes can't always enjoy the costly thing. So it's shifted the culture.
What sort of audience do you get for that?
A base audience would be about 60 people, but it can go up to anything for a for a top line artist to about 180 or so, that. And the maximum size of audience that the Globe One can take is 200. So that's just anything.
Yeah. And you mentioned house concerts. I suppose the example here would be the Clifton
concerts. Yes, which when Christine Archer Lockwood came here, that was, you know, she had in mind doing that. So that also offers another opportunity for people to enjoy concert music.
Yeah. And that's just in her own home?
Yes, in her own home. And that's, the culture has become one which reflects a global commercial culture, and so that the from my perspective, that things have value according to what people will choose to spend their money on, and the notion about things having intrinsic value is no longer seen to be something which is worthwhile pursuing, apart from those amongst aspects of the of those of Asian heritage.
So you mean there's classical music,
music there. Yeah. But it's also reflective of a stepping away from involvement in community activities, which is something which sports clubs are also experiencing. Community service clubs like Palmerston North Rotary. I know that they are. All these community organisations are struggling with the same thing.
Yeah.
And I continue to do what I do because I believe in the value of it.
At the same time, in Palmerston North, we invested a lot in the renovation of the Regent and so on. Does that still have a role to play in classical music?
Yes, it does. It is important. But I have to say that the concerts by the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra, or organisations which attract a larger group, they are restricted to the downstairs audience.
Only. Once the whole...
Yes, and once it was the whole theatre.
Yes.
It's interesting that ballet can still use the whole of the Regent Theatre, because I think that our culture is a visual culture rather than an oral culture. and the idea of going to a concert where you just sit and listen without visuals is alien to most people. So, I have to say that the concert music sector does its absolute level best now in reaching out to younger audiences, to different audiences. But I think that the culture swing has gone so far in the direction of individualism and commercial culture that it's not going to be any time soon that there's going to be a swing back. Yeah.
This is something that we're seeing now. Mm. If you went back 50, 100 years or whatever, would older people then be saying the younger people just aren't interested in what we're doing?
Yes. You asked a question, I think, in the previous programme, that was concert music at the time, expression
pop music.
Popular music. What is now concert music was initially music which was found in churches, so it was an expression of aspiration of to the higher. Mm. It made you think upwards. Mm. If it was in the Catholic Church, the music was quite abstract, and it, like the high altars and all the rest of it, made you think. Mm. It gave you an ambience of thinking of the spiritual. If it was in the Protestant tradition, it was enabled the people to join in together the worship of God. The music was associated with things higher. And then there was the other aspect of the origins of concert music, which was in the amongst the wealthy royalty of in Europe, and so therefore it was a privileged sector. Later on in the 19th century, when it got out of the patronage of the higher states and princes and principalities there into the concert hall, it was still the middle class who could afford to do that. It was still music there in the 19th century for concert artists, beginning with, say, Mozart and Beethoven, who were wanting to explore the depths of their experience in music. It still had its spiritual aspect to it, through into the 19th century. Into the 20th century, one aspect of it was more democratic, still tending towards the concert audience, except in Britain, where you had the brass band and the choral tradition.
You've got things like Stravinsky.
Stravinsky was way out on a limb there. He was his music was exploring the avant-garde in music. Yeah. So he was, and that was what was happening in the 20th century. It lost contact with its everyday audiences there.
Okay, yeah.
And that was a downside in concert music there, because the composers went their own way of self-exploration, often leaving behind people. At the other end, we had the brass band tradition, which was working class, and aspects of the choral tradition, which was also had aspects of the working class. Yeah.
And chamber music?
Chamber music was always something which was somewhat elitist, because the music was written for people who wanted to gather in rooms, that's the chamber thing, and hearing music which was not at all populist.
Okay,
that was the whole purpose, was to explore depth of thought in music.
That word elitist, I think, cropped up that it was a bad thing and should be put down. And yet the extraordinary thing now is they're talking constantly of elitist sport.
Yes, and this is where we have the swings and roundabouts. The word elite was to represent the highest, but we have got the tall poppy syndrome now, except when it is backed by commercialism in sport.
Yeah.
Who knows where we're going in terms of concert music. My role, I see, is to continue for as long as I can with a tradition which I know its intrinsic value, and I have the luxury of being able to work with young people to support their personal growth and their musical growth, and to continue the tradition, and hopefully that at some stage or another there will be a realisation of what is missing. Perhaps as we jump from one priority to another and leave behind other things in its wake, we'll start to realise what has been lost. yeah. an attempt to recover.
Yeah. There's another dimension as well, and that is that, especially with the rise of computers and things associated with that, it seems attention spans have got a lot shorter.
Yes.
Instead of reading a whole book, you want to read a short article, or you want to watch a video clip and so on. And you're saying also for classical music to become a good musician, it's hours and hours of discipline, practice right through childhood, when often children simply don't want that. So is that...
So my experience in that is that certainly some of the children that come to me have got very short attention spans, and their retention of material is very limited at one level. And then the very best of students, because of their background, because of their culture, because of their family, whatever, I've got a five-year-old student who I'm just wowed at, because she absorbs everything that I say. She absorbs anything. She is inspired by concert music, wants to emulate that. She is, and the very best of my piano students are way ahead of where I was at their level. So we have got the polarisation of the community.
Yes.
The very best are so amazing in every yes. respect.
And that's a strong, disciplined home culture that...
Yes, and look, I can't explain it all. In terms of my five-year-old, certainly this home culture, but it's in the genes as well.
It's a flair.
Yeah. I mean, in academic circles, the notion of talent is sometimes viewed with some scepticism, and I've seen it written by academics that talent is a product of hard work.
Yeah.
Rubbish. In my experience of dealing with students who come to me who've had no musical background, they sit down and the first lesson I can tell whether they've got something or not. And for those who don't have it, it makes me work harder for them to make progress, and I've got to take shorter, smaller steps to help them to get beyond there.
But those who do have it still have to work hard to nurture and develop it.
In my experience of school teaching, I remember one student who was on a much derided musical intelligence test. Now, he scored 100%. And he had no interest in music at all. So what has got to happen for a musician to succeed is they've not only got to have the basic talent abilities, and nobody has got absolutely all facets of it, but they've also got to have the personal characteristics, including stamina, self-discipline, resilience, you know, a whole lot of personal characteristics for them to succeed in the world, which will not necessarily say we're going to support you.
Yeah, and is it one of the things where there's maybe young people that they're open to all sorts of things, but if they're not developing it, then they lose it later on?
Unfortunately, my experience is working with secondary school students is that they come in with a culture where they know that secondary school is the time where they have got the support structures, if they have got an interest in concert music, where this is the time that they go for it, for everything that they've got. It's hard work when they get to the year 13, their final year, because they've got all these important exams. And then their focus, they know, is going to be on their career. And so that the tertiary level is basically where they focus on their vocation, their career, and the music, except in a few rare cases, has got to be let go. So they do it all at secondary school level, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And so for me, I hope that they will continue, but what I hope that I've created is, one, an awareness of the value of the music, so that it will open doors for their own personal interest and whatever.
Yeah.
But I also know that I'm in the business of personal development, that in order for them to succeed in what they're doing, that they need to develop the self-discipline, the focus, reflection, perseverance, all those personal qualities which will stand them in good stead for beyond.
So music can be good training when they're young, but I suspect also there'd be quite a lot of people who, when they're older, regret that they weren't disciplined enough to learn an instrument well when they were young.
somebody has once said that youth is wasted on the young. And yes. I hear that, that very often from parents to say they wish that they had taken seriously the opportunities that there were, before them. There. And it's the same sort of thing. They weren't aware of the opportunities that are present in the formative years of the teenage years, where you can absorb so much rapidly and you can't do it so in your 20s and beyond. Yeah.
You've managed to have music as a very big part of your life. Now, with issues like AI and so on, so a lot of the standard work can be done differently. So they're saying we're looking for different skills. Is music something that's likely to become more valuable in future in that way?
Every culture that is known has got music, if not at its heart, but as a significant part. It does appear that human beings were designed as musicians, and I could go into that to back that up. Musicians, music is part of what it is to be human. The real issue is music an expression of our surface desire for entertainment and expression of physical movement, or does it have levels that take us deeper into our conscious awareness, to take us on a journey inwards? And so music stands there as a possibility for a journey of the exploration of self, if we are open to it.
Yeah, and we even hear now of music therapy and more other things. Yeah.
Under Morva Crockson, music therapy was a very important thing. Just to finish up with, one of the things that I used to do is to go into centres with geriatric wards. And I remember one time going into the Brightwater home and playing music and old songs. And at the end of the session, I had some nurses come running up to me and saying, "This is a miracle, a miracle. We have these two or three women here who have not spoken for the last year because they had Alzheimer's or the equivalent, and they were singing along to the music." Music goes deeper into the soul than does speech.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.